3. Drunk on Comics, episode 68, live at Grand Con.
Wow.
Yeah. This should now be like episode 70 because you had 67 two other times.
Hey, guys, I know that we're at a gaming convention because a wizard just walked past me. That was Ed Greenwood, co-creator of the Forgotten Realms, which is kind of a big deal for some of us nerds.
Is that D&D or something?
There was a tingling in the force, but it was a wizardy force, not a Star Warsy one.
Harry Potter got happy.
Dude, I'm surprised. You know, we're seeing all these people dressed up here at this convention, and I haven't seen a Harry Potter reference or anything like that.
No, neither have I. But welcome, guys. This is Drunk on Comics.
We are that.
Yeah. We got a little distracted there at the beginning.
Weekly podcast where we talk about comics and news and collecting and conventions, just like Grand Con, and all the kinds of. I don't know. Gambits of gaming?
Yes!
I don't know.
I like that one.
Gambit Games, because he's got cards.
Well, and was Gambit in X-Men Alert?
He was.
Awesome. Yeah. Anyway, yeah. So we've got the full crew here. I'm Derek.
I'm Matt.
I'm Tony.
Kevin here.
And let's just get it kicked off. This is actually the first week in a number of months where we can't say that Off the Shelf is brought to you by Grand Con, or it's the last one we're going
to
say.
So Off the Shelf is brought to you by us, the caring folks at Drunk on Comics.
Yeah, but I do want to say, before we get in, thank you, Grand Con. It's been awesome. It's a great, it's the last day of the show here, and it's been a lot of fun.
And listeners, you should come to the Print Center. Come check us out. We're going to be at Grand Con.
Who wants to kick it off this week for Off the Shelf?
You know what? I'll go first.
Before we do, word of warning.
Spoilers.
We may spoil stuff, so if you don't like them and you hear us talking about a book that you haven't read yet, just either suffer through it or go read it and come back.
Now, I'm excited for your review, because I love Lex Luthor.
I'm not often a DC guy, as you know, but Tony picked it up this week, so I bummed it off of him. And I'm reviewing Lex Luthor number 1, which is the Superman Action Comics number 23.3, part of the whole Villains Initiative. And, I'm really covering this because Lex Luthor is kind of like Dr. Doom, except American. Story is by Charles Soule. Pencils by Raymond Bermudez. And inks by Dan Green. And color by Ulysses Arriolo. So, good book. I'll talk about the art first. It tells a really good story. I love the use of green. Kind of has that kryptonite feel to it. And since, kryptonite is the bane of Superman, I really get that feel that Luthor really is that bane of Superman.
Then who's the bane of Batman?
Bane.
Oh, shit.
I don't know, haven't been following the story too far, but Lex Luthor's getting out of prison again, or maybe for the first time in the New 52, I don't really know. But this book really shows off what a giant megalomaniac villain Lex Luthor is. I always thought he used to shave his head because, too much radiation exposure to kryptonite and stuff, and it turns out he shaves his head because he's a giant dick. After getting out of prison, he immediately goes back to work running his companies, saying that he's going to destroy one of his competitors because his competitors was being an ass. And so, really, it's just his first day being out, and he causes an incident that the first thing is he's pissed off because Superman never shows up. And he thought that Superman would be welcoming him as soon as he left prison.
Yeah, he acted like a little crybaby that Superman wasn't there to see him be released.
I know.
You could really tell. I mean, the nice part about the writing on Lex, though, is that they really showed how egotistical he is. And he goes thinking, Superman hates me. I'm the one that he thinks
Superman's
about
obsessed with me.
Yeah, that's what it was. And I was like, wow, that's a nice touch on the character.
How blind he is to the fact that, no, he's the one that's obsessed with Superman.
Yep.
So he maneuvers this whole thing. He's got a personal assistant who's helping him, with all of his dossiers and appointments for the day. And, he makes this whole scheme trying to get Superman to come save these fallen space shuttle guys that he sent up there and then told them to kill their engines. And Superman never shows up because apparently he's captured by the villains or whatever. I'm sure it's in some DC book.
Is Superman making an appearance in this book at all?
No. Just on the cover.
Yeah, that's funny. He's on the cover, but yeah, that's
and
crazy.
So Superman never comes. The shuttle explodes, and the personal assistant was like, "You could have saved them." He goes, "Yeah, but if I didn't save them, I would have failed. And people would be mad at me for failing. But if I never try, people can't get mad at me for failing.
Yeah.
I am only human after all." And then his assistant's like, I have to call the cops on this one. He goes, "Oh, that's a shame." And then he pushes her off a building.
Yeah, that part right there, I was like, whoa. I could see him going after, you know, the guy that was trying to take over his corporation. I could see him trying to do this whole failed thing to get Superman. I was like, that was just a dick move to just, boop, there you go.
So Lex Luthor, he's a giant penis, and overall, I really like the book, though.
that was a really, really nice issue, I thought, though.
Did you read Forever Evil, Kevin?
Yeah, number one.
Okay,
yeah.
This happens, like, almost legitimate right before that, because you know how he's in the helicopter at the beginning of that story?
Yeah.
This almost seems like it's the day before that, so Superman is gone.
Because, Matt, did you read Forever Evil?
Not yet.
Okay, because in the Forever Evil 1, they were taught, that's where Lex was threatening, like, this business partner or whatever. Yeah. Okay. So there might be a little time.
In the helicopter. Yeah. And this ends with him in the helicopter with this woman. Or with that woman.
New woman. Oh, Miranda. Wow.
Yeah.
Damn it, man. That sounds like another... Because I never picked up Action Comics. I pick up Superman Unchained.
Batman, Superman.
Yeah, God damn! Like it's like
Superman's it's like the X-Men. Avengers of
the Avengers, the X Men. Yeah, so many titles.
He's everywhere. It's because he's so fast. He's faster than the Flash.
Yeah. All right, I gotta talk. Surprise, Daredevil. You know, this is Daredevil number 31, written by Mark Waid, art by Chris Samnee, colors are by Javier Rodriguez. I lost the page here, where everything's at. So, but anyway, I will grab all the rest of the people here in a second. This was a really, really nice story. Javier Rodriguez and Joe Caramani did letters, and then cover was Chris Samnee and Rodriguez as well. But the reason I wanted to talk about this one was, I mean, I've talked over and over and over about how awesome Chris Samnee is on art. And it's just beautiful, beautiful work. Mark Waid's been doing a great job with the character of Matt Murdock and Daredevil. There's some nice twists in here, but what I wanted to talk about more than that, just in general, was how they tied in some fairly recent news. I mean, as soon as you can get it to a mainstream comic, with the Trayvon Martin case.
Yep.
And they kind of use a almost identical situation in this for a court case, which then leads to riots, and you know, Daredevil has to go out and try and help stop the riots and blah blah blah. It was some of the smartest writing I've seen in a while, because while that's a very polarizing topic for a lot of people, they did it in a very, very nice way where they didn't get political, and they showed more of how either way, I think, with a result, riots can ensue, and it doesn't help anyone.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was a really nice touch on that.
Well, and it was the fact that they weren't putting it in there to try to make a political statement. It was more, we're actually putting this in here because how easy could a riot start after an event like that?
Yep.
And it kind of makes, I really think it brings some realism, if you will, to the fantasy worlds of superheroes.
Exactly.
And I thought that, you know, that's an appropriate use of a really, you said, polarizing argument.
I want to touch on the whole riot scene for a second, because Daredevil, having his senses and everything, all of a sudden is kind of going like, this is like really messing up with my extrasensory. I don't know who this person might be or this person might be. And I start thinking, doesn't that happen though in almost all Daredevil books or all fights? Like, he's fighting on a warship and guns are blasting, like, how come that never messes it up, but the moment that there's a riot in the streets, that messes up his sensory?
They do talk about that in other situations. If it's like excessive noise or, you know, rain, snow, those things mess up, you know, his radar. And they do bring it up in a lot of other books. But yeah, this one was just something. Now, the one
and I like
thing,
that's the reason why it seemed like, for me when I was reading it, the reason why this thing was incited was to kind of F with him.
Yeah, well, and it was. I mean, you find out that it's the Jester that's doing it to, you know, kind of screw with him on everything. But there's two other cool things in here. The one was actually that Hank Pym helps come to the rescue.
Yes, yeah, because he wants to start it raining, but Thor is off. He's asking for Thor.
Yep.
I do like that he's like, I do know the Avengers. I could ask them for help. Well, that was a good call.
Yeah. Well, and wasn't Daredevil in the Avengers briefly?
Yeah, he was in the new Avengers.
Yeah.
But Thor's off-world, so Hank Pym helps out.
Yeah, and Hank Pym sends his ants in and seeds the clouds and causes it to rain, and that was great. The one thing that's in here, there's a little section where Jester kind of interjects into the newscast and makes it fake and makes it look like the DA is saying, go out and beat up all these jurors.
The jurors, yeah.
And he shows, these are the photos and addresses and names of all the jurors, and he holds it up and shows it there. Well, you've got the 12 jurors in there. The one juror's name is Alex P. Keaton.
Are you serious? Yeah. That's awesome.
And so for our younger our younger listeners, that was Michael J. Fox's character on Family Ties.
And Derek remembers this when he was, what, 40 when you watched that show?
48, 49. Yeah, I mean, I remember because, I mean, it was on for a while, and I started, no, I'm sorry, 58, 59 is about the age, because when that show went off the air, that's when I first got my AARP card. So, all right, well, fuck you, Tony. What do you got?
Wait, I do want to say there's one, I've always thought Daredevil's power and his disability, you know, it doesn't seem like it ever shows, ever. It shows like he can just kind of walk around with just clicking his stick and getting the sonar. I love the part when he was with the jurors, and one of them says, but what about this guy? And he's showing up an iPad, which in Daredevil's vision, you can't see. And I'm just thinking, that's kind of cool. And then the other guy just says the name, and then Daredevil gets who was on the screen. And I thought that was a genius way of showing how, okay, sometimes it doesn't always work out for him.
Well, and Mark Waid, I mean, he has done such a good job just with the character in general. I mean, from all the little details like that to, you know, the actual personality, the struggles of real life of Matt Murdock. You know, like I said, I mean, there's a reason that this book is just continually over and over and over. I mean, this book was, you know, best artist anchor for an Eisner Award. But, you know, I think Waid got nominated as well. It's just an amazing series. I mean, I can't say any more than I haven't already said about how good that book compositionally is.
I think Derek likes it.
Yeah.
If he were the Fonz, he'd give it two A's. Oh. All right.
Well, you know, you bring that up, Tony, and about his sight and whatnot. And, I mean, I'm not going to review it, but I definitely thought it would be mention-worthy since you brought it up. Was this? I just picked up a nice, very clean version of What If number 8 from the first series. It's called What If the World Knew That Daredevil Was Blind. And it kind of brings up a lot of those type of questions. And I thought, I got to pass this around to you guys. This was a wonderful book. It's very heavy. It seemed like it was 50 pages of awesomeness in it. But yeah, you know what? This kind of shit makes me think, you know, more in depth about the character, and makes me kind of want to pick it up. But
yeah, so, I'm gonna read that.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, okay, so my off the shelf this week is Batman 66 number 3. Now, there's actually two stories in Batman 66, number 3 this week. You got The Joker Sees Red, and that's written by Jeff Parker and art by Joe Quinones.
Quinones?
Quinones. Yeah, we talked about this for a while before we start recording, but
we aren't sure how to pronounce that one.
Joe, just drop us a line. Let us know.
Joe Q.
The second story, Batman Scrambles Egghead. Written again by Jeff Parker and art by Sandy Durrell. First, I got a couple talking point memos I want to ask you guys. now, First, I have to say, how awesome is it that they pay tribute to Cesar Romero's version of the Joker by still drawing in the mustache?
Yeah, the fuzzy lip.
Yeah, because he refused during when they did the show back in the day. He didn't want to shave it, so they're like, "All right, we'll just heavy makeup it." And wow, what a great tribute to an excellent, excellent actor. He really was. My question now is Egghead a real character in the Batman universe?
I've never heard of him.
He's probably one of those characters that came from the 40s or 50s or whatever. And
I remember seeing Egghead on some of the kids' TV shows.
Oh, really?
But not just in DC either. He was also in the Marvel Superhero Squad as a villain. And I think it's just that, like, generic, back in like the 40s, you called a nerd an egghead, and
yeah,
Sonic's bad guy's name,
yeah, Dr. Egghead.
Now that you guys are done, I will butt in here and say that Egghead was actually created for the 60s TV show.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because of the number of puns that you could do with that.
Oh my gosh. Oh, I'll get to my cream in my pants in here a second. But I really think they should bring back rich descriptions of characters. let me explain what I'm talking about. So I was reading this book. It was from the 70s. It was a Spider-Man issue featuring Electro. And he wasn't just Electro. He was Electro, the evil monarch of electricity. Yeah. And then we have in Batman 66, the clown prince of crime, the Joker.
Yes.
Like, why don't they just call him the Joker or call him Electro? You know, but I like that. I mean, it's kind of cute and campy. They should bring that back.
But you know, that's a nice thing as far as the writing's concerned for somebody who may be brand new. And yeah, I mean, we all go, okay, yeah, everybody knows who the Joker is. But you know, I think it was Stan Lee that said, you know, every comic is somebody's first comic.
Yeah.
Wow. That's a really, really great thing to say.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was talking about that when we were having drinks the other night.
Yeah.
You missed that one, Kevin.
Well, what happens when you're either pissing your pants or passing out in the alley. So, yeah. Well, the first thing I noticed...
Oh, drunk asshole!
Oh, come on.
No alcohol allowed!
No, we got a heckler.
Yeah. Otherwise known as Josh Werner, which... Yeah.
Whatever you do, don't sing!
We'll get back to him later on in the week. So,
well, first thing I noticed about this book, man, I thought it was pretty hefty. Now, how many pages are in a comic book these days? 30?
Typically 22.
22? Okay. So
with a ton of advertisements?
Well, no, 22 pages of content.
This is 30 pages of content. So, you know, and you get two stories, so I thought that was entertaining. But, you know, at $3.99, this is a great value. You get an entertaining story. Humorous as all hell. You get math. Awesome math facts in this book. It's really cool.
Math?
Math. Dude,
Is it because it just says Batman 66? And
no. And no, Egghead's like, no. I make one egg plus two eggs equals.
No, there's actually some physical science math in here. Pretty cool. I even think, I think there's even some Easter eggs in here. But
with eggheads?
Oh, I didn't realize that. All right, but let me explain to you what I think of an Easter egg here. Okay, so in here you have actually an appearance by Dr. Quinn,
medicine woman.
No.
Oh.
Dr. Quinn, who works at Arkham Asylum.
Is it Dr. Quinn or Dr. Quinzel?
Dr. Quinn.
That's interesting, because, see, now, Harley Quinn is Harlene Quinzel.
Yeah, no, they just refer to her in the book. She says, "Hi, I'm Dr. Quinn," here. Which I take that as a little bit of an Easter egg.
Yeah, or at least a nod.
Yeah, but one of the things, and, you know, I'm going to, really, I can talk so many good things about the art, but there's little things that I love. Let me show you, I'm going to show you this. There's this beautiful picture right here where the doctor and the Joker are looking at each other, and she's just got this little smile on her face. It's just that little attention to detail is just...
And it's a really big smile, too. Like, almost a little too big.
Yeah. The art really is beautiful.
Oh, my gosh. So, as I mentioned before, I mean, there's two stories. They're quick, to the point, self-contained. They are just absolutely brilliant. The dialogue is tight. The Eggman story is pun heavy, and it's smart.
Is it a yolk fest?
hey, as long as the message doesn't get scrambled, you're fine.
All right, let's break this up.
No, the art is absolutely hot. I mean, I'm going to give a special tip of the cap to Maris Wicks for the colors. Such beautiful. Actually, I went into the artist room here, and I was trying to get some help with some pronunciations of the names that I still butchered anyway, and everyone took the camera from my hands and go, wow, look at this art, the colors are absolutely amazing. And I reviewed issue one a couple months ago, and generally I want to put more space between it, but there's so much good stuff in this. I just have to gush about it and tell everyone, God, pick up Batman 66.
Nice.
Cool. So,
Tony.
Well, speaking of Batman...
I thought you... when you started that, I thought you were doing the chicken dance. Like, that's like... Yeah.
Speaking of Batman, the chicken dance goes just with all those egg puns.
That's right.
Okay, I just got that.
All right, cluck you. Let's go.
Scarecrow number one, by Peter Tomasi. Was it art by Simon Kudransky? Pretty much, this is setting up for the miniseries Arkham War. As we know, Forever Evil is its own little miniseries going on, and there's going to be a couple other miniseries. One of them, Rogues Rebellion, with the Rogues, which was kind of set up in that book this week. I really liked this book out of any of them this week, because A, it is doing a continual story, but it takes on all those previous Batman bad guy stories that have come already. One of the things I start realizing in this is Scarecrow, he's kind of a genius. He's smart. But a lot of Batman's bad guys have fear as, like, their thing. He obviously, you know, induces fear. Ra's al Ghul uses fear with his people. So you either have intelligent people, you have fear, or you just have big brutes that have no, you know, brain, like Bane or
Killer Croc
or Clayface. And I'm like, man, you can just categorize all of his bad guys into these three works. What you have right now is Penguin, which I thought would have been within the Penguin book, but it wasn't as little mini, is now the mayor of Gotham. I mean, we got no heroes, we have Gotham running rampant, and they've divided the city into different quadrants for some of the bigger baddies. I know Mr. Freeze has one spot, Poison Ivy has another. Killer Croc's now living in the sewers, but he likes it that way, but he's also, I don't know, with Poison Ivy. And you see, and the Riddler is just chilling in this library. I mean, he didn't really care for much of it. And you see Scarecrow going around explaining how, and he already was kind of a big part of Forever Evil, handing out the coins to people and saying, you know, these people are going to want you. He's starting to hear that there's something going on from, I forget what the other prison is. It's not Arkham.
Belrive?
Belrive is, it's another one up there where Bane is from, and something's going on with that, but you don't quite know what's happening exactly. But he's kind of going around to tell the other bad guys in their areas, there's going to be something happening. I just want you guys all prepared so we can be on a frontal assault if this happens. And I love how he tries to be the manipulator, goes to every single one of them, I just wanted to tell you the first, you know, before anyone else. And he gets to Poison Ivy, who, when Croc comes out of nowhere, just wanted you to be the first. And then when he gets to see Poison, she goes, quit the bullshit. I've been a manipulator longer than you have. I know I'm not the first, but what's going on? And you're getting this whole sense of, yeah, what is going on? It seems like it is a genuine preparing for war. And kind of the last page, it's a fucking beautiful page. I left the comic at home, so I can't show you guys, of just Gotham. And you see, you know, one tower that has, like, bats flying around it. You see this other one that's kind of frozen. You see this other part more green. Like, you can kind of see the quadrants of Gotham and who's controlling what. And it just says, you know, continued next month in Arkham War. So there is war brewing. There's no superheroes. And I can't tell you how much I'm loving just these bad guys' stories. Like, all the heroes could stay dead forever.
But that's something that, in a long time in comics, it was easy to write a hero because you give them lots of stories, you give them second chances, you give them backstories. You have a long time to develop a hero. But a good villain, one that's worth bringing back, is hard to create because you have less time to really make that villain shine, to make people like the villain. You have to like them, but also be okay with them being defeated. So I think creating good villains is actually much harder than heroes. And so since these books are highlighting villains, they're pretty much highlighting the ones that have worked and the ones that have stayed. Unfortunately, we're not going to get an egghead villain book.
Well, and I think it was, I think I was talking to Jim about it the other night, and we were just talking about villains in general, that the best villains are the ones that you see little pieces of yourself in and that you can almost relate to and go, man, if I was in that situation, I might do the same thing.
It's a good villain has to not, just crazy villains are only fun for a while. And like, that's, I'm not a huge fan of the Joker because he's, you know, always just random chaos. But someone like Ra's al Ghul or Dr. Doom, who really sees it as, no, I know the way to solve the world's problems and to hell with anyone else who's going to get in my way of fixing the world. Those are the best kind of villains because they actually believe in their cause and they kind of are noble ambitions.
And they understand you got to break a few eggs to make an omelet.
Anyways, that was Off the Shelf this week, brought to you by Drunk on Comics.
And Grand Con. So, all right, Tony, should we do some news? Or do you want to go straight to the best on tap first?
Go straight to best on tap.
All right, best on tap this week is Buzzkill, number one, and it is from Dark Horse Comics, drawn by Jeff Shaw. And I will pull the photo up here for you guys as soon as my little pad can actually get a signal again. But the reason that I brought this one up is that it's your standard superhero up on a ledge looking out over the city. But it's actually, you know, he's got a bottle of booze in his hand, which we like, and he's smoking a cigarette. But there's a liquor store sign in the back. But if you look closely, the city is actually a series of bottles and glasses full of liquor.
Nice.
It's just a really, really nice design because now this comic, I'm not going to get into the whole story, but this superhero derives his powers from drinking large amounts of alcohol and or
you're
doing
giving
drugs.
Away our secret.
Well, that's our superpower too.
I think that's how most drunk fights get started. I'm a superhero.
Yeah. Yep. But beautiful job by Shaw on this. I mean, the colors are great. The line works awesome. Definitely one that I could see having hanging up.
Yeah.
Just because of the fact that, like, you walk by it and go, oh, that's nice. And then when you stop and look, it wasn't till I finished reading the book and I went back and looked at the cover and went, whoa, I missed that. That's just nice job.
Yeah.
So, all right. News and notes.
Yeah, what do you got for
news and notes?
The first one, a couple of these are going to be follow-ups to stuff that we've talked about in previous weeks. We talked about how Dark Horse had put a little animated GIF of a blueprint of a Firefly
ship
up there. And it is actually confirmed now that Dark Horse is going to be doing a new Serenity comic. So for all you Firefly fans out there, you got something.
Was Josh Whedon involved in this, Josh?
I'm sure that he's involved in some way. Okay. I mean, because I believe he owns the rights to all the.
Well, and I know a lot of people who are looking forward to continuing the story, but there's a lot of fans that want it to be canon. Whatever stories they get, they don't want, you know, someone else taking over. So,
yeah, cool. And Georges Gianti. I don't know how you pronounce George with an S on it. That's one I don't know. Georges Gianti. He's going to be the artist, but I did not see if it actually said who the writer is going to be on this.
Okay.
But so that's kind of exciting. There was Tony. Was there something about Inhumans rumored? Did you hear?
Fuck, man! I love all the rumors about it. I do know that they Stan Lee's, which I guess you got to take with a grain of salt because you would hope that he knows what's going on, but he may not. But he was saying how he's pretty sure the Inhumans movie is coming and it's in the works.
Yeah, eventually.
And to be honest, I could see that with as much as they're doing with Inhumans right now in the current Marvel world, with as much as it's going to be ongoing, I wouldn't see why that wouldn't be the next property.
But, you know, the Inhumans are definitely one of the corners of the Marvel universe that is either really, really good or nobody cares about, and it's unfortunate.
Yeah, I didn't even know that they were still really a topic until the last handful of months, because I only know them from reading Fantastic Four from the 60s and the 70s. So it was interesting that you guys talk about the Inhumans, and that they're still around, they're still relevant. And, I don't know, it's like, I'm interested to see if they have, like, new members or whatnot, but...
Some of them are the same, because I've read a couple of those in the past.
You have the royal family that stayed pretty constant.
Okay, like Black Bolt.
Black Bolt and Medusa. They introduce other characters from time to time. A lot of them tend to be just other members of the Inhumans. But overall, I think they've kind of kept a lot of the same core characters. Oh. And then they introduce, you know, new ones for new villains or new... my favorite right now is Maximus, the Mad.
Yeah, he's like kind of the bad guy of the Inhumans, sort of.
He's just crazy. He's just crazy. And he's tried to overthrow his brother in the past, but now it's like him and Black Bolt, like, work. Black Bolt actually has Maximus doing all of his scheming in the background under Black Bolt's command, so he's been really cool.
Now, my question, though, is would this be, like... Inhumans. Just the name by itself doesn't sound very marketable. Like, should the general public want to go see that? I mean, do you guys agree on that? Or?
Here's the thing.
It's a Marvel title, we'll go see it anyway.
That's going to be what's going to happen, is it's a Marvel comic book movie, people will go see it. Now, will the average, you know, person go see it? Probably not.
They should.
Not unless it's marketed or tied into the greater scheme. Like, if Guardians of the Galaxy goes very well, I could see them tying in the Inhumans with the Guardians of the Galaxy. And if you can tie it into some of their other properties that are successful, I think you'll get some people to come see it.
As long as you put Tony Stark in it, people will go.
Yeah.
That's true. So I have a kind of big spoiler for people who have been reading Infinity. Matt, you play the Marvel Avengers Alliance game, right?
I was going to bring that up, but I didn't want to, you know, get made fun of. But yeah, I play that fandom game on Facebook.
Yes.
And excessively.
I see
a lot of updates.
Yeah, when you can't hang out or do anything or do posts.
I'm always at work. Go on.
So within that game, they've been churning out a lot of content that is more relevant to the comic book world right now, such as when... AVX was out. They had some certain missions for that.
They had the Phoenix Force. They just did Ultron during the Ultron War. They just backtracked and did the Dark Reign.
Yep. And right now they have coming out Infinity.
Yeah.
And from that you can get multiple different characters that you can unlock. You can get this and that. Well, a character that you can unlock is named Thane.
Yeah. I had no idea who he was.
Who is an Inhuman. Who, if you've read Infinity, you realize Thanos has a kid who is living among the Inhumans. Thane, Thanos, I don't know if they're related.
I hate you for pointing that out to me, because I was just going to go, I have no idea who this guy is.
And he's got immense power, it says, but you don't know what it is. So, pretty much Marvel kind of is putting the cat out of the bag again, but in a different marketing world, and now I just let the whole world know now.
Thanks, I
hate
you.
If they haven't played that game.
That's awesome. Another follow-up, we talked briefly how DC was not going to have a traditional booth at New York Comic Con. Mm-hmm. They did release what they're going to do. It's going to be a whole bunch of the Superman costumes worn by, you know, Christopher Reeves, Tom Welling, what's the new guy? God, why am I blanking on
the Henry Cavill,
The Brandon Routh, you know, so they're going to have, it's going to be a great big Man of Steel 75th anniversary booth is what they're going to do.
Are they going to have Shaquille O'Neal's costume from Steel?
No, I don't believe they will.
Oh, man.
maybe just his shoes.
Those are just some big shoes to fill.
Yeah, I think that's a good move. I mean, it gets people excited for the character. And
well, and it's a 75th anniversary, and it looks like Canada's been doing more about that than DC is. So.
Yep. Got a little bit of Walking Dead news. The first is that the character of Rosita is going to be coming to the show.
Okay.
And it's somebody from Twilight was cast. Now I'm trying to figure out who it was. Christian Cerritos, who played, I think, I don't know. I can't tell you because I didn't see any of the Twilight movies. But so there's
Wink.
News. Yeah. I didn't see them in public.
He just read the books.
Yeah. So that's the new, and then there was some other news about Walking Dead that's, I think, probably bigger news.
Dude, that's huge news. I think it's huge. Because it's Walking Dead right now is, it's got to be like the one or top one or two rated TV shows on cable.
Mm-hmm.
Right yeah, I would say. And basically what that news is that there's going to be a spinoff series, which Robert Kirkman was saying that he's thrilled because while the TV show doesn't follow exactly, by any means, the comic book, they kind of run parallel universes.
It's vaguely familiar.
Yeah. Whereas this is going to be all brand new content.
That's cool.
So he's excited to be able to explore something new in a TV setting with brand new characters and things that don't have to be familiar at all.
It's the Power Walking Dead. Or no, maybe they got those little chairs, those the scooter ones.
Yeah, the hover around.
Yeah.
is there like a spinoff in the comic book world of Walking Dead?
There's a lot of
not really
officially off of that title. Okay. There's obviously a lot of zombie based. I mean, fanboys versus zombies.
Excellent.
You know, it's not a spin-off of The Walking Dead series.
So it's kind of interesting that they're doing a spin-off of the TV series first versus the
you
comic.
You know, they have so much going on in the comic, you don't need to do a spin-off comic, I don't think.
Yeah, and I think just for the, as far as the story goes with the right for the show, it just gives them a clean slate that they don't have to keep following the comic book, but they can slap Walking Dead's name in it and people will gush all over that.
I hope that they take a different approach, because, I don't know, sometimes it's somewhere between drama and action, the TV show, and it'd kind of be nice if they want to take it in, like, one direction.
Well, and maybe they want to go for the younger audience, so maybe they will have One Direction on there, and maybe it'll be the Twerking Dead.
No.
Well, I'm looking forward to this. I'm getting excited.
Okay, you...
Yeah. That was a rotten egg.
Yeah, yeah. That you've been incubating that joke for way too long.
Sorry, I just laid it down.
Oh, I got to drink away that problem.
Yeah, that's whoa. They want my sunny side up disposition, but anyway.
Stop poaching my jokes.
Oh wow. Okay, so.
Our new favorite villain, Egghead, now.
Yeah. The Unthinkable comic book, which was, I believe, Boom put that out, is getting a TV treatment. So, picked up by Fox, more than likely to be, it was Boom, and I just quick looked. But it's going to be, probably a pilot coming out for it, and then I haven't heard much more about that, but it's just kind of cool to see. Boom Studios, a smaller independent publisher, is now getting into the TV and movie game. So that was kind of a neat one. One last follow-up to something we talked about last week. And I think it was last week, Tony, you reviewed Reverse Flash.
Yes.
Yeah. We talked about Francis Manapul and Brian Buccioletto, who are leaving, the creative team is leaving that book. Found out that Christos Gage is going to be writing it, which he's been killing it on a number of different books. And recently I've been talking about him with Absolution Rubicon. So I'm very excited. I've been following him on a couple different things, and when I see his name, I've been picking it up, and I've been very happy. So I think that's good news for the fans that love Manipul and Buccioletto that they're leaving, that they've got somebody great coming in.
Cool.
Last thing I think was a little rumor.
Oh, geez. So I guess Channing Tatum wants to play Gambit. And yeah. And the first thing that I would say is, well, you're Channing Tatum, so shut up. You're awful. I mean,
yeah, but the ladies would love him.
Yeah.
He's magic Gambit.
Yeah. Gambit's new outfit is a topless.
Is
yeah.
Is he even like New Orleans? Is he even Creole of descent?
Well, it was funny because the article that I read, he goes, I'm from New Orleans. Well, I mean, I kind of near it.
What?
All right, but there's a difference between, like, hey, I was born there, but, you know, I kind of talk with a stupid accent anyways, or actually having that New Orleans drawl and, you know, that Southern charm.
Well, who knows?
Which isn't even New Orleans, because I can't even do it, because it's a really hard dialect to speak.
That Cajun accent, you know.
It's hard, and so...
Get some of that gumbalaya and then that shrimp down there and then them docks and go fishing.
Dude,
and,
is there a really cross between a redneck wanting to be a Cajun?
Yeah, but you also have to do it charmingly, and that's it. Like,
yeah.
I've always found that it's whenever I'm seeing a cartoon version of the X-Men that has Gambit in it, it either makes or breaks the character for me that the voice actor is good. But the voice actor is a lot different than an actual actor who usually isn't that talented.
I think if he really wants to prove how much he wants to do that, he needs to be on the next season of Swamp People and hang out with those people that... They actually have to put subtitles up, even though they're speaking in English. So that's my recommendation. But all right, that does it for news and notes. On to Indy Turnpike.
Yeah, that sounds good. Next.
Next.
Good next there, then.
Yeah. All right. Indy Turnpike this week, I've got Zero, number one, written by Alice Kahn.
Zero, number one?
Zero, number one. But, and it's spelled out Zero, not the number Zero, but... Yeah, so I've got Zero Number One, written by Alice Kahn, art by Michael Walsh, colors by Jordi Belair, and I got the Chris Burnham cover. And I'm going to keep this brief, mostly because we're kind of running out of time here at the show, but I didn't really know much. Actually, let me take it back. I knew nothing about
this
book.
Zero.
You know Zero.
I knew Zero.
You beat me to it.
Damn it. Yeah, I knew Zero about this going into it. And I... You know, it was one of the books that was actually sealed and bagged at my comic book shop, meaning that it is a mature title. And I'm like, shit. And I'm like, man, I don't know. I mean, I had a fairly healthy week. I didn't know if I really wanted to do it. But the cover is striking. I mean, it's red and yellow. And all three of the covers that they had are like this, just different artists. And I was like, okay, cool. I've liked... You know, what these creators have done before on different projects, so I decided to give it a shot. The first thing that grabbed me when I opened it up is that the inside front cover is the first page. And you flip all the way through, and it's nothing but solid story, and the inside back cover is the last page. The title page is the back cover. There's not a single fucking ad in the whole book.
Nice.
Yeah. That I absolutely love.
And how much was it?
$2.99.
Jesus.
Which to me says, you don't need to fill your book with ads, Marvel and DC.
They're all self-promoting ads, though, so most of them are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of them are, but then you got the cars and the Harley Davidsons.
And the stupid Tony Stark laying in the snow with the Audi one.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. But anyway, back to this. You know, without spoiling as little as I can from this book, this story is set in the not-too-distant future. The first page is 25 years from now, and then, like, a couple, maybe two pages later or one page later, it's 5 years from now. And so it's kind of a Black Ops-type story, but the super soldiers that are in there and on both sides of the war have been given technological enhancements. And, you know, I gotta say, though, that one thing... I did say it's mature. It is certainly mature. This is not a kid's book.
Oh, God, no. Oh, my God. I didn't even really want to flip through this book because it There's too much violence.
Yeah, it is ultra violent, and there is some adult situations in there as well. But you know, this is a heavy book, and I actually had to go back and read it twice to really wrap my head around it. Kant has a really intricate story, and for first issue, incredibly, incredibly heavy, like I said, but that's a great thing. The art by Walsh, very gritty, really dirty, and it's got some really nice heavy line work. And Jordi Belair, man, she slapped her signature on this with her colors. It is gorgeous. So if you're looking for a deep, you know, really beautiful book to look at, a really engaging story that literally goes cover to cover, this is the book. So that's it. What do we got left here, Tony?
Who's in the book, and we can talk about whatever for filling a little bit of time.
All right. Well, actually, before we do Booze in a Book, then why don't we talk? What'd you find here that kind of we haven't discussed this really, but anybody have any good finds?
I found Battle Pope Volume 1.
Really?
By Robert Kirkman and folks. I was looking forward to that.
I think two things that I found. First one, which still kind of exciting, Year in Review, Marvel 1994.
Yeah, we're going to have to cover that so we know what goes on in 1994.
Seriously, though, like, it was in quarter bin, so I was like, why not? Let's see what happened in 94. Dude, and I'm reading it, and I was like, there's a lot of shit that happened.
I can't believe how much shit it happened in 94. And I remember that year. That was probably, like, my peak year of collecting.
Mm-hmm. I think it was when I was starting, so I looked at everything
then. Well, and it was also the initial year for all the 2099 titles.
Yep.
Yeah, that and Generation X, if you remember that. Debacle.
Yeah. No, I remember 94. I mean, clearly that I remember that. Well, my first Adobe Hut finally, you know, burned down.
Talking about 1994, not...
Yeah, no,
1894.
No, my Adobe Hut, no, that was... It finally went down. You know, I mean, it was sad because it was out at the historical village, and I built that thing from scratch. But, yeah. Kevin, did you find any goodies?
I've gone and looked at it too much, but I do have to give...
Hold that one.
I'm so excited about it. I'm still excited about it. I think I dreamt about it last night. But no, we'll hold off for a little bit about why I'm so excited here. But really, no, I've you know what? I've just been kicking back, watching some games, learning a little bit about the gaming industry. Because the show we're at is definitely a hybrid comic book.
Gaming
expo. Very interesting time. So I look forward to looking around a little bit more later today.
Yeah. Probably my best find, I got a Spectacular Spider-Man number 200 out of the 50-cent bin. You know, and it's the holofoil cover, which, you know, it's at that time,
it's hardcore.
Everything was a holofoil cover, especially.
Was that a mention in the 94 wrap-up?
I'll have to look and see.
Yeah. But the cool thing, out of the 50-cent bin, really nice shape, signed on the cover by Sal Buscema, the artist. And I was like, are you kidding me? I mean, that dude is a legend. So, I mean, I was thrilled. It seems like every convention I go to, I always end up finding one comic out of a dollar or 50 cent or maybe $2 bin that's signed by a creator. And I love that. So that was a great find. I got a couple sketches already. I've got a few more being, you know, finished up on commissions. I'll post pictures of those up later.
Cool.
Yeah, we are, where we're located is pretty excellent because we are right next to the toy guy.
Yeah.
And Derek was making fun of the whole time of saying, you know, God, Tony's just going to be over there the entire time. And
up
I was like, I probably won't.
All weekend.
And
no, he just went there right away.
Yeah, I just went there right away. And then I'm like, fuck, I need to have that Transformer. I need to have it. Masterpiece Soundwave. God, it's going to be a fortune, but how much? And it was expensive, but it wasn't much more than what I thought it would be. And so I'm like...
It was only like $10 over original list price.
Yeah, so I was like, sold. Last night, getting home from the bar, I was like, I got to take this thing out. I didn't have time yet between the con and going out for the after party. So I'm taking it out, trying to get it out of the package. I'm a little drunk. I'm trying to transform it. I'm like, man, this is a little more intricate than some of them. So I had to actually look at the instructions. It is the most beautiful Transformer I have ever had.
Which one is Soundwave?
He's the turns into the cassette.
Is he the boombox?
Yeah. And then okay. he has the tapes little that tapes that come. And I didn't transform those yet. But what is so excellent about this is his blaster cannons attached to his back for like batteries. So like when he transforms into the cassette tape, you can then just put these in as batteries, and that's where they hook up into his alternative mode. And it's like genius how he transforms.
It was also really cool. One of the little weapons that you can give him is actually a Megatron in his gun form.
Yeah.
The small Megatron in his gun form, which I was like, that's cool detail, because
yeah,
I like
my,
Soundwave.
My new favoritist.
I know, I'm going to have to come transform it.
All right. Booze in a Book, I think. And this is what Kevin wanted to get to, what the next, you know, favorite thing that came up here at the show. Was Rock and Roll Comics number 41, Paula Abdul.
which makes you think, were there 40 other episodes about Gloria Estefan? And
no, what's funny is like, okay, now, again, I found this.
Dude, I saw a Gloria Estefan one, man, that I would get that, make multiple copies, and I'd litter that all over your apartment, man, because I know how big of a Gloria Estefan fan you are.
I hate her.
I don't understand why you guys...
And it's nothing personal. I don't mind her as a person. I fucking hate her music.
Dude, okay, how do you feel about the Miami Sound Machine?
They were fine.
All right, back to Paula Abdul.
Yeah. Now, a little preface on Rock and Roll Comics was that I saw a bunch of the other issues. AC/DC, Metallica, Poison, Guns N' Roses, you know, all of these rock bands, and then Paula Abdul. I am pairing this with an MGD in a can, but only if it has the new vent hole that you can pop open with a key. Because neither of these things should be consumed, but if you punch a bunch of holes in them, they do go down easier.
Did this have guest starring Scat Cat?
Yes.
Oh my gosh, there's like three appearances of MC Scat Cat in this issue.
The art is just fucking terrible. I mean, my favorite were like John Stamos is drawn in there, and
oh, dude, it's like a little biography of her, man.
Yeah,
shown as a Laker girl,
backup singer for Michael Jackson or whatever. Prince is in there. Oh, that's one of the best parts.
I want to read this.
Because there's a phone conversation between them. And
yeah.
Hi,
Paula, this is Prince.
No, what are you doing? There's a levitating phone. Oh, yeah. The phone's just levitating next to Prince's ear. Like, it was like super glued to his face or something. It's so ridiculously awesome.
Yeah, I'm actually probably going to go back and buy some more of those Rock and Roll Comics.
Yeah, honestly, actually, go to, we got it on Twitter right now.
What's that?
We actually posted a picture of it.
Yeah, posted the picture.
Go check it out. The front cover is...
Says it all.
It really does.
Yeah, and that's the best art in the whole book is that...
Yeah. And it's not saying much.
Well, do you guys got any last calls?
You know, I had a ton of them, but they're all out in my truck because I didn't bring it all in.
You don't remember what you read, though?
I can look at my pull list and see what I got.
Not in public, dude.
I'm going to pull my list out.
Okay.
I say my only one would be Wonder Woman 23 point, I believe it was point one. The villain of the month is Cheetah.
Okay.
Yeah, you know what? I haven't really been digging Wonder Woman a whole lot. I'm subscribing to it right now. But that, I'll tip my cap to that one.
The Cheetah? Yeah, that was a good one.
Yeah.
Executive Assistant Iris came out from Aspen. It's I think they're just about done with their 10 for 10. It was a dollar issue for the number one. That was cool. Bubble Gun number three. We talked about Lex. We talked about Scarecrow. Trying to think. Oh, Arcane.
That was pretty good.
The which is the Swamp Thing 23.1. That was a really good story.
Once again, I picked up every single DC villain one and enjoy them all, except for one of them, Dial E. I just did not get it. It was a little bit different. All the other ones, I mean, yeah, great. But
I tell you that book itself is just different, and I've been picking it up. But that book is completely different.
And I mean,
so I could see if you're jumping into that one, I could see where.
And I knew there was eventually going to be a rotten egg, but you know,
Wow.
Jeez, Tony, that was a hard-boiled egg joke. I read God of Thunder, Thor God of Thunder, starting a new story arc with Melkith, the Dark Elf, which, oh, surprise, surprise, he's the main villain in the Thor movie coming out next month. However, really, really happy with this book still. Jason Aaron's doing a great job.
Yeah. Last two, I had Superior Spider-Man. I'm still there. I've been reading Spider-Man for over 20 issues.
Come up with new guesses as to how long this is going to go on for.
Yeah. And then I picked up Savage Wolverine number 8. Just jumped right in.
Why did you pick it up, Derek?
Because it was Elektra teaming up with Wolverine, but more importantly, that they were fighting Kingpin. So, I mean, it's basically Daredevil tie-in.
Yeah.
Infinity was really good, as well as New Avengers. I'm really liking the story arc, and I hope it continues. I hope they continue on schedule and continue telling a good story.
Last one I read, Superior Carnage. It's just blown it out of the water for...
Superior than the other Carnages?
Yes. And I like... It's a new-looking Carnage, and I just love in there when he just... The new Carnage pretty much flat out says, I don't know what Cletus's whole idea of like wanting to just go crazy and stuff when a single bullet's just as efficient. And it's a smart Carnage now, which is a little bit more scarier than just the chaos. So, really good.
Couple other things. Make sure you guys are following us on Twitter and Facebook. Check out the website, drunkoncomics.com. And later on this week, we're going to have some interviews live from Grand Con.
Oh, that's cool.
It'll be live when we record it, but not when you listen to it.
So, unless they pause and rewind and let's not even get into that bullshit again.
Wow. All right, guys, you ready to blow the coop?
Do it.
All right.
I just got it.
I'm Derek.
You crack me up. I'm Matt.
Kevin.
I can't even pull out my last pun. I'm just done.
Oh, no, I gotta hear it now.
That was over way too easy.
Oh, jeez. All right, guys, keep reading those comics. We'll be back next week to talk to you about them again. See ya.